How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today, our true survival story podcast where we talk about true survival stories.
Where people survive.
Yep.
Yep.
We have our Christmas tree up. That's cool.
Yeah, a little three or four feet tall?
It's 4 feet.
We have a bucket hat on top replacing the Christmas star.
Yep.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Getting in
it's
that
cute. It has
holiday
spunk.
Spirit.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Yeah. You know what? I just want to jump right into the story because I think that this one is crazy. And also, I can't tell how long it's going to be because I have quite a few pages of notes. So
yeah, didn't you say you have 11?
We have like a lot of pages of notes for this one, but we'll see how it goes. We might surprise
ourselves. Got a lot of details.
Yeah, we got some details in there, but let's not hype it up too far because, hell, I haven't even told the story yet and I don't...
Yeah, what is it?
So... This story is the Chowchilla school bus kidnapping.
Chowchilla?
So, yes.
Where's that?
So it is a little town in California. So this story takes place in 1976 in Chowchilla, California, which is a small farm town. It's a not very wealthy area, but they worked really hard, and the town was full of families, and, you know, they all pretty much knew each other. Right. And so... Thursday, July 15th, Dairyland Elementary School was having their summer school program. And this wasn't a program for students that had bad grades or didn't show up to school. It was actually a program that many children wanted to attend because it just gave them something to do for their summer. There wasn't a ton of places to go in this town or things to do, so the community decided to hold this summer program so that the children could spend time with their friends and still continue to learn and have a good time. So... They would spend...
What? To just do something.
Yeah, just to give them something
just
to do.
Just do anything in this small town.
And it was cool because they would spend the first half of their afternoon, you know, learning as usual, which, you know, was good for the school. And then the second half of the afternoon, they would do this, like, fun activity or they would, you know, go on a trip or something. So it was still fun for the kids as well. And so the community believed that this was a great way to keep the kids out of trouble because... And it would also... help them to be excited to learn when they did have to go back to the full school, you know, portion of the year. So
kind of like making learning not suck.
Yeah. So,
I have a question. Is this like a voluntary enrollment thing or is this like, okay. Like, it's not like the whole school is.
No, they don't have to. They sign up for it. But pretty much the whole school did. It was...
Okay. And do you know how big this town is? Like, do you know how many people about?
I don't have...
It's a small town.
I don't have a number, which I know you love.
I love numbers. I need numbers.
No, I don't have a number. It's a pretty small town. It's one of those, like, you know, communities where everyone knows each other kind of thing. So it's not huge.
So probably, like, I don't know, a couple thousand? Maybe a little more.
I don't know. But, So the program was supposed to stop on July 16th, but the children had started a petition to keep the program going for the rest of the summer. And so the teachers and the bus drivers signed the petition saying that they'd love to keep working as long as the kids wanted to keep going. So Frank Edward Ray, who went by Ed to most adults and Mr. Ray to the kids, was the community's 56-year-old school bus driver. or one of them. And he was also a farmer in the area, and he had grown up in Chowchilla and knew basically everyone in the area. Many of the kids he drove back and forth to school were actually the grandchildren of the people that he went to school with. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he loved his job, and he loved the children and the community. And at that point, he had been working for about 30 years and could have retired, but he wanted to continue working and seeing the kids. He wanted to be helpful and, you know, be around people, and he was just all around a great guy.
He's a people person.
Yeah. He's just a sweet bus driver. I loved my bus drivers growing up. They were fun.
Yeah, I never rode the bus.
Yeah.
I was always driven by my mom.
You were a drop-off?
Yeah, I was a drop-off. Or I would ride my bike to school.
Oh.
It was close. Even in the winter, which was fun.
Hard.
Because there was like there's always like a month stretch or two where it got particularly bad, like in Michigan in the snow. And basically there's a couple times where I was biking to school on ice.
That sounds terrible. Yeah, so. on my my bus stop was right outside of my front door, and I lived like on a little corner, and there was always like a little dip in the road, and so in the wintertime it would like, you know, fill up with ice.
Right.
And it would be like our little, we would call it our ice skating rink, but it was, you know, so tiny, but we would just like skate around on the little ice with our little sneakers and stuff.
Nice.
The bus
Fun
stop
times.
The bus stop was the place to be.
It was the place.
Yeah, I got stories about that bus stop. It was cool. But anyway,
yeah, so I'm assuming he's taking them just like on their like trips. Like he's driving the kids to and from their trips, or is he like actually driving them to and from summer camp every day?
So it's not summer camp. It was just like the school, but you know, sometimes in the second half of the day, they would go on like a trip. So on this day, they went to like, a community swimming pool or something, and he picked them up from the community swimming pool. So wherever they needed to be. Oh, hello. I don't know if you can hear that, but that's loud. But so yeah, wherever they needed to be picked up from, he would go pick them up. Cause again, it's not a very big town and he's the school bus driver. So yeah. So on July 15th, his job was to head to the Chowchilla Fairgrounds swimming pool at 3:45 to pick up the children. So the students he drove ranged anywhere from almost 5 to 14 years of age. And there weren't a ton of teens, but there were a few. So all these kids hopped aboard Ed's big yellow school bus to head home down the road lined by fruit trees. Ed was pretty much the perfect school bus driver. He was always there on time to pick them up and drop them off every single day. The bus actually had 4 stops, and the parents knew that they could count on Ed to get their kids home safely. Ed's bus was the last to leave the swimming pool that day. And all was well, and he made his way to the first 3 stops of the afternoon. Unfortunately, Ed's 4th and final bus stop didn't happen that day. There were 26 students still on the bus along with Ed.
Damn. So, how many kids were on the bus total then?
I don't know.
The first three.
Yeah. I guess as many as fit on the school bus. Maybe the 4th stop was like the big drop-off, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. 26 just sounds like it's at least still half full.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, the school bus didn't show up for this fourth drop off. And, you know, these parents are used to Ed bringing their kids there on time every single day. So
yeah, like he's on top of his shit all the time,
every day. So the parents tried to keep calm after the first few minutes had passed. The bus should have been there, thinking it's fine to be a few minutes late. When the bus had been unaccounted for about 30 minutes is when the parents started to panic. At this point, parents had gone to the street to see if they could spot the bus or see any signs of really anything. And at around 4:15, the parents would start calling the school, and they reached the superintendent. They asked the school if they knew of any delays since the bus hadn't shown up yet. The superintendent got really confused and was like, well, he dropped off the other students at the other 3 stops, so Ed must have just broken down somewhere in between, and we should hear news about it soon. And so the parents started calling the bus barn, and they hadn't heard anything from Ed either, which made the parents just completely frantic. So
right, and there's no cell phone. You can't just call Ed.
Right. Yeah, so many of the parents headed up to the school to question the superintendent themselves. So by 7 p.m., there was a full-blown search put out to try to find these missing children and Ed. There were patrol cars everywhere that were driving up and down the bus route to see if Ed had broken down somewhere, but the problem was that Ed and his bus were nowhere to be found. So
yeah, such a large, like, such a unique car or like vehicle to disappear,
to just go missing.
Yeah, an enormous thing.
I know. Yeah, so everyone was super confused since,
like, how do you lose a school bus?
Right, since everyone had made it to the third stop, so they really had no idea what could have happened in the short span of time between Ed's third and fourth stop. So at first, people were, I mean, obviously blaming Ed, saying that he had stolen these kids. But his wife, Odessa, who had been married to him for many, many years at that point, said that Ed was the best man she knew and he would never do something like this. He loved those kids so much and would never do anything to harm them.
Yeah, I mean, these are his friend's grandchildren,
right.
You said, right?
Yeah, and he, I mean, this is he's not like
and
a new bus driver.
And he's been doing it
for
30 years.
Yeah, he's always on time, very friendly. The kids love him. Like, he's a very good man. So she was like, there's no way. But I mean, the parents have no answers, and this school
right.
bus just disappeared, and they're like, what could have happened?
It's illogical. Theory.
Yeah. Yeah. So no one else had any theories or answers at this point, and the bus had just vanished. So that was when the FBI was called in to assist the police department in finding
shit.
The entire bus of children. I mean, because think about it, like, for the FBI to be called in at any point, like, it's going to be for an entire bus of children that go missing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's crazy. So by 8 p.m. that night, a new search was going on where they had helicopters flying above the area to get a better view of the complete area. They were searching, and after some time, they spotted a bus in a shallow branch of the Chowchilla River. The bus was actually...
In the river?
Like, just not in the river. The bus was dry, but it was by the river.
Okay.
So the bus was dry, like I said, but hadn't been pulled... but had been pulled into the river and was covered with different debris in an attempt to camouflage it.
I'm confused. You just said it was pulled into the river.
Or just, like, the riverbank. It wasn't wet, but it was just, like, in the river area.
Okay, so, but it's, like, on the bank covered by shit.
Yes, it's not, like, in the water.
Yeah, but you can't hide an entire, 20-foot yellow school bus
right,
from the FBI. They're going to find it.
Which is why they found it, yeah.
Yeah.
excuse me, but... Yeah, so they found this bus, and it was covered by debris and everything, but, you know, they found absolutely nothing. There was no sign of life or evidence of the children or Ed on the bus, which was very concerning, but on a brighter note, they didn't find any evidence of blood or a struggle, which meant that nobody on the bus had been harmed at that point. So around the area, they found swimsuits and towels and books and cotton swabs, which they assumed was from the children. And the most important evidence they found were tire tracks that were above the bus's tracks.
Mm.
So they appeared to be from a van. So now they were speculating that someone had used the van to take all of the children. And there weren't any footprints found around the area, which led them to believe that whoever did this had placed the children from the bus into the van without ever stepping on the ground. And this was the biggest mass abduction at that time. So these parents' worst nightmare had come true. Their children had been kidnapped, and they had no idea where they were or if they were okay.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. That's
26 kids go missing.
Yeah. And they're, like, young. Like,
yeah,
most of them...
5 to 14?
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. Most of them were, like, 7 to 8, 9, you know, that area.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, so at this point, people began to look away from Ed being the main suspect, and they began to worry that this could have been the job of the Zodiac Killer. So...
Oh.
Yeah, so...
That was going on at this time.
Yeah, so in 1969, 7 years prior to this kidnapping, the Zodiac Killer had written one of his many infamous letters saying, this is the Zodiac speaking... I am the murderer of the taxi driver over by Washington Street and Maple Street last night. To prove this, here is a bloodstained piece of his shirt. I am the same man who did in the people in the North Bay area. This SF police could have caught me last night if they had searched the park properly instead of holding road races with their motorcycles seeing who could make the most noise. The car drivers should have just parked their cars and sat there quietly waiting for me to come out of cover. School children make nice targets. I think I shall wipe out a school bus some morning. Just shoot out the front tire and then pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, so. That's fucking horrific, but he didn't shoot out the school bus.
Yeah, there's no, you know.
But yeah, oof.
Yeah, but that's what they were worried about. They're like, well.
Yeah, they got no other theory.
Yeah.
Because Ed doesn't seem to be involved at this point.
Yeah. And, I mean, for those who don't know, the Zodiac Killer was never caught. And the police actually received their final letter from him 2 years prior to this kidnapping. So people believed that it was possible that the Zodiac could have been behind this, you know, which would have been just an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's got to be dead by now, right?
I mean, I haven't really done all the research, hopefully. Who knows?
Yeah.
But the other option was a ransom being involved in this kidnapping, but that didn't make much sense since the area was very rural and full of a bunch of farmers and families that really didn't have any money.
Right.
So to pick up these random 26 children who didn't have wealthy parents to begin with seemed highly unlikely. Ultimately, no one knew who could have done this or why they would do this, and the search continued with dogs and horses and helicopters and FBI agents, the whole police force, and many, many volunteers. Nearly everyone was trying to help in just any way they could. And they found out that the tire tracks were in fact from vans, but more specifically, the white creepy vans that you picture when you think of someone being kidnapped.
Well, surprise, surprise.
Right.
They busted out the horses for this?
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, it's 26 children.
Like, well, I know, but I'm just, I'm gonna like envisioning.
I know.
It's fucking.
Yeah, the horses clomping
horses
around.
Just like riding on.
I mean, I guess they kind of just have horses available since they're farmers.
That's probably true. Yeah, it's rural.
Yeah, and they could cover more ground, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole community is out here, and the FBI. So witnesses had come forward saying that the day the children were abducted, they had seen two of these vans lurking around. And obviously, you know, they were noticed because these vans really weren't seen in this area. So members of the community were put on watch, which basically meant that they were given police radios. And if they spotted another van like that, they could report it in. So investigators were also watching the Bank of America in Chowchilla, since that was the bank that Ed and his wife used, because Ed was still a suspect in the kidnapping. They just wanted to make sure that there wasn't any movement in either of their accounts at this time. So they also started to believe that the book, The Day the Children Vanished, was possibly inspiration for the kidnapping. This book was about a busload of children who were abducted, but only as a distraction so a gang could get into the town and rob a bank, because everyone was out searching for these kids, so there wasn't anyone to watch the bank. And they got a ton of money because of it. So, you know, that was just another reason that both
Wait,
banks...
this happened, or this is, like, a published plan?
It's a book.
Or it's a book.
Yeah, it's just, like, a story that I thought it could have been, you know, mirrored after.
Gotcha.
So that's why...
So we have The Zodiac Killer and then Book for Bank Robbers.
Yeah.
Both as leading theories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had no idea.
So is there only one bank in this town?
So there, I think there was, like, two, because they said...
Okay.
They said, you know, both banks in Chowchilla were being monitored to
make
sure
that... Yeah, so you locked that shit down.
Yeah, just to make sure that no ransom demands were being made, you know, or anything like that. So, and honestly, they were kind of hoping something like this would happen, because that way they could at least get some kind of answer and possibly even get the children back, because, you know...
Yeah, the bank robbing would be... I don't know, like, at least nobody dies then. It's just, like...
Yeah, they're like,
money,
okay, just give
whatever,
me money,
I don't
get the
give a shit,
back.
Give me my kids.
Because yeah, that's the, you know, only thing that's important at this point is that there's 26 children missing, so.
Yeah, is this still day one?
I think this is going into day two, because.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this is like, this goes on for like, I don't know if it's like 2 days or three, but yeah.
Three days. Wow.
I think it's like 2 days, but like two full days. So yeah, this is when the authorities released a statement saying about 175 pupils from kindergarten through either grade were picked up for school shortly before the summer session began at 8:45 a.m. After a morning of academic-oriented classes, arithmetic, history, and so forth, the pupils, as usual, spent the afternoon in a variety of recreational pursuits, including a swimming outing for some. School ended at 3:45 p.m. and the bus driven by Mr. Ray left the Dairyland School, which is in a separate, which is in a sparsely settled farming area 12 miles west of here. The bus made three stops down to drop off children and continued on. At about 4:15 p.m., for unknown reasons, it went off its normal route. Instead of turning right at an intersection leading to the fourth stop, it apparently continued west toward what is called the Berenda. It was in that place that the bus was found at about 7 p.m. after parents began calling the school inquiring about their children. So, I mean, that's just everything we've said up until this point, but they right. just, that's their statement, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so the oldest boy on this bus was 14-year-old Michael Marshall. And according to Once Upon a Time podcast, he was not normally on this bus. So his mom would normally pick him up around noon after school, like after like the learning portion of the day. And then Michael would just spend the rest of his day, you know, doing other things. So,
right.
Yeah. So the only reason he was on this bus this day was because the day prior he had gotten into a little bit of trouble. So he was picked up at noon and Michael had gone home, but his mother had to go back to work. So when she returned home, she found Michael and his friend Dougie had gotten drunk off of some beer they found. So his mother told him that he needed to stay at the school program if he had nothing better to do. So that's the only reason he's on this bus, is because he got drunk the day before with his friend, which sucks because what God. A day to be on the bus.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That sucks. I mean, he's just 14.
Yeah, yeah. And he was angry about it because usually he'd use this time to practice rodeo riding, and his father was a professional, and he wanted to follow in his dad's yeehaw footsteps.
Yeehaw footsteps.
That's what I wrote down. I liked that.
I we got it.
Yeah, we got it.
That's awesome. So he has a rodeo family.
Yeah.
How does one become a professional rodeo person?
I don't know. You just yeehaw your way through life, I guess.
Hold on.
Yeah, you just hold on. So it really sucks that he took the bus that day, but honestly, it's like kind of for the best because he really did help Ed like a lot throughout the entire thing that happened. So
yeah, no, I was thinking like if everyone's 7 and 8, it's not really helpful, but if you have like a 13 or 14 yeah. year old who's like, I don't know, maybe big for their age,
yeah,
probably is a little pretty helpful.
Yeah, and there were a couple like 11 and 12 year olds, but he was the oldest at 14, which is like so crazy.
Yeah, I know. Could like, you imagine? Do you remember being 14?
No.
That's like he's what, like, eighth grade, yes, ninth grade?
No. Yeah, I'd say like ninth Must grade. Be. I mean, he's in middle school, I want to say, so probably eighth grade. Yeah, yeah. He's an eighth grader.
Oof. What yeah. a time.
What a time.
That's so, the oldest person.
Yeah.
Wow.
Other than Ed.
Yeah.
Poor Ed. But So there were 19 girls and 7 boys total. And like I said earlier, most of them were aged around 7 to 10 year olds. There were a handful of kids that were 5 and 6, and the youngest being a little girl named Monica, who was still 4 years old at the time. She was almost 5, but she wasn't quite yet.
Yeah, are you even in school technically when you're 4? Well, I thought that was preschool.
Yeah, well, she was almost 5, so I'm sure she was like, you know, in the kindergarten, you know,
that makes age. Sense.
But so one of the children, 7-year-old Sherry Hinsley's parents, stayed at the police station the entire time, and her mother said, "It's a group of people who want money or publicity or both, and they'll get it. Look at all the reporters that are here. They're going to get all the attention they want," which was completely true because the phones were ringing off the hook, and reporters were everywhere trying to get statements, and the entire community was helping in any way that they could, but no one had any information about where these children were. And just the whole thing was just very chaotic. So they waited for hours and hours and stayed up all night long, which ended up paying off because at around 4 a.m. on Friday, the 16th, the police department would get a call. This call was made from 100 miles away from Livermore at a rock quarry. And the caller reported that he found a busload of children and the bus driver, and they were all completely okay. So, that's my story. Shit. That's all. No, I'm just kidding. Could you imagine?
It's like,
Yeah, that's all. So all 27 of them were mentally and physically exhausted, but they were alive. And they were all taken in by the FBI, given food, blankets, comfort, and any medical attention if they needed it. And then they were
Hold
all...
Hold on.
Yes.
They were found 100 miles away in Livermore. Miles, yeah. Completely fine, other than, like, being shaken up and not, like, probably dehydrated and starving. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? Like, where is this abductor? He just, like, left him there? Like, what? I don't get what the... Why? Yeah. Why'd you do it, dude? Right.
That's what everyone was asking. They were like, what the... What?
Like, yeah, what the fuck? Huh? So they just found the van?
No. They found them. They found the kids and Ed. No van.
Okay, so...
Well, I'm about to tell you what happened.
Please get into, like, where... Like, how... Like, how were they found? Like, I'm confused, like... So they...
Huh? So they end up, you know, getting out of the situation that they're in, and they run, and they find a guard, like, who's, like, stationed on the site that they're in, and the guard calls the police.
The site that they're in.
I'm gonna get to it. Do you want me to just keep
going?
Let's just jump in. So so here's what happened. So at around 4:15 p.m., they were headed to the fourth stop, as we know. And so they were headed down a very narrow gravel road. And there was a white van parked in the middle of the road. So the van had its hood up. So Ed slowly tried to get past it, but also, you know, went slowly to try to see if everyone was all right, because again, he's just a great guy and wanted to help everyone in the community. So
right.
If they did need help, he was going to stop.
Right.
As he slowed down, three men got out of the van holding guns and had pantyhose on their faces. They demanded to get on the bus and forced Ed to the back of the bus with their guns. They shouted for the children to be quiet, and that's when one of the men went back to the white van, and the other two began driving the school bus down the road with the van following behind. So the youngest girl, Monica, she's 4 years old, actually asked one of the men if he was the Easter Bunny, because the legs of the pantyhose were draped on the sides of his head, making it look like he had long ears.
Could you fucking imagine being Ed?
I know. Like, is that not just the most
the
sad
creepiest
thing?
Like, sad, I don't know, like,
fucked up.
How? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, "Are you the Easter Bunny?"
It's like, "No, honey." Yeah.
And so the man screamed at her, and after this, she just clung to Ed for safety and wouldn't let him go.
Right, at least Ed was there to comfort her.
Yeah. Ed really, I feel bad for Ed.
Yeah.
Like, damn.
He's just trying to help these motherfuckers.
That poor man, you know? Yeah. He's just trying to do his job.
And Easter's ruined forever for that
girl. Yeah. A lot of things are ruined for these poor children. They're scarred. So they were driven through thickets of bamboo and mud and down bumpy roads. And you know, they're just being tossed about in this van or in this school bus, and that's when they reached the shallow branch of the Chowchilla River. And so that's when they were forced off of the bus through the back and into the white van, and another van that was already at the location.
So there's two vans.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the children, Larry Park, said he was too scared to move and he was just wondering how it was going to feel to die. These children, some as young as 5, like I said, or 4 really, are getting screamed at and, you know, held at a gunpoint by a shotgun. Like, they're staring down the barrel of shotguns, which is, like...
At five years old.
So, wow. Just wow, you know? So, one van had Ed in it with a bunch of the children, and then the other had Michael with a bunch of the small children. So, at least they both had,
they were split.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, Michael's 14, so, you know, but he really does step up and take care of the little kids. So 9-year-old Jennifer Brown and her younger brother, Jeff, were separated at this point, which was even more terrifying for them. Jennifer said she felt like she was an animal going off to the slaughterhouse. And there were far too many children to be in the back of these vans, so they were all basically just shoved in the back on top of each other without any seats or anything to hold on to. And there was absolutely no source of airflow back there. It was 100 degrees that day, so they were basically boiling. And to make matters even worse, the three kidnappers had boarded up the inside of the vans, so there wasn't any windows or any source of light whatsoever. They also had no food or water, and they would be driving in these conditions for nearly 12 hours with no bathroom breaks.
Oh my God, this is literally like the Holocaust when they shipped the Jews off to the concentration camp. Like, this is...
Oof, what a comparison.
Is it not? They're shoved in together with no food or water.
Yeah, it's not
for
good.
12 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And that... they're going to be, like, probably having to go to the bathroom on each other.
Yeah, well, they did.
That's fucked
they,
up.
Like, they, like, threw up on each other and, like, you know, used the bathroom, and it was...
And they think that they're going to die.
Yeah.
So,
no,
I don't
I
know.
Mean, seems I guess it pretty... is. Yeah, no, I guess.
Seems almost the same. How horrific.
Yeah, seriously.
Who are these people?
Right.
And please get to what they want.
Yeah, so the younger children were crying and begging to go home, so the older children excuse me, again, I just drank a LaCroix, so I'm a little bit like...
Oh, you're a little bubbly?
I'm a little bubbly inside. the older children began singing to the younger children to try to soothe them. And they sang songs like "If You're Happy and You Know It" and "And Love Will Keep Us Together." So almost 12 hours of driving later, the vans came to a stop, and the children were taken out of the van one by one. The men would shut the doors in between, grabbing out each of the children. So, you know, the other kids in the van are left in the dark, not knowing what the hell they're doing to the people that were taken out. And Ed was actually taken out first, so he's not even
there.
Oh,
only adult yeah. goes first.
Right. So, yeah, so when they were pulled out, they were made to tell the men in the pantyhose their names, their addresses, their phone numbers, and to give them a piece of clothing. So the last two kids in the van were Michael, the oldest boy, and 5-year-old, or really 4-year-old, Monica. And he said he didn't want to give her to the kidnappers, so he went first, and they had to rip their hands apart. After this, they were forced down a ladder into a hole in the ground, back into the darkness. And it was basically like this buried box, so it had a covered top and some structure, but not much air at all. The only light they had was a tiny flashlight that Ed was given. And Jennifer said she thought that they were sending them to hell when she saw the ladder going underground.
Wow.
Like, these kids are so young, you know? She's right. Like, oh, we're going to hell. Like, we're just...
Holy crap.
We're going to hell.
Imagine believing that you're actually going to hell.
I know. Like, that's...
Like, in real time.
Yeah. These kids are like, they have no idea what is going on or for what reason this could possibly be happening. And the only thing that she could think of was, oh, yeah, we're going to hell.
Right. Crazy. Yeah, but they're obviously... They're going the ransom route because I don't. I feel like they wouldn't have asked for phone numbers and clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're pretty much trying to just, you know, construct a list of all these children to get ransom money. Yeah, so the men held guns on them, forcing them to go into this dirt hole in the ground. And once they're all down there, the ladder was immediately pulled up and then covered. And then they covered the hole with dirt, leaving them in the dark. So. The inside of this, you know, thing that they were in was terrifying. The walls looked like they were made of loose wire that was about to cave in. Then the walls were held up by some crickety-ass looking wood beams. There was dirt falling from the ceiling, and it just gave off cave-in vibes as fuck.
Yeah. Like, it cave-in
was,
vibes.
Like, he was... this hole was serving you cave-in vibes.
Yeah.
Af. So...
Not... comforting.
Mm-mm. So inside there were dirty mattresses, a couple of containers of water, cereal, peanut butter, and bread, but it was really only enough to last that many people one meal. So there was a makeshift toilet, which was just a small hole, you know, even further into the ground. And there were some small air tubes that were letting in a faint breeze from a small fan that was battery operated. But the batteries would slowly and surely die, which made it just much harder to breathe.
Yeah, so, like, is this, like, a hole straight down? Like,
mm-mm. So...
Or is it kind of like an L?
No, so it's almost... It's, like, a big rectangle.
Okay.
In the ground.
But, like, they look up... They're looking out.
No.
But it's, like, covered.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's, like, a tunnel.
No, it's a buried moving van, if you want to know.
a buried moving van.
Yeah. So these kidnappers buried a moving van.
It's a fucking big hole.
Yeah, and then they just cut a little hole in the top of it to, like, lower the children in. So...
Jesus.
Yeah, so it's not great. So one of the little girls, Linda, promised God that if she got out alive, she would be the best little girl in the world for the rest of her life. And so these kids began to give up hope. They're dirty, they're tired, they're hungry, they're terrified. But Ed and the oldest, Michael, decided that they were not going to give up hope and die without trying. So they began stacking these mattresses from where they knew they had entered. And the stack was actually tall enough for them to reach the top. But there was some sort of steel blocking the entrance, so they couldn't open it up. They ended up taking down one of the rickety wooden beams to try to use that, but that was incredibly risky because they didn't know if the entire thing would just cave in. And luckily, they were able to use that beam to pry off this steel sheet that was blocking the entrance, and that's when they realized that they couldn't actually get out because the entrance was being held down by tractor batteries, which are extremely heavy. So Ed, Michael, Jeff, and Robert, who are all just older boys, all worked tirelessly to try to inch these heavy tractor batteries off of whatever was covering the entrance. And they used the little water that they had to pour on themselves to try to combat the heat exhaustion, because if they were unable to work, they were, you know,
dead.
They were dead. So, yeah. So they were taking turns, and they kept going, and eventually the steel plate moved, and they were able to dig some dirt aside and saw some light peeking through. So they then sent one super brave small boy through the hole to see if the coast was clear, because none of them could fit through the hole, and they didn't know if these except kidnappers were, you know, just standing there waiting for them to try to escape. So they sent this little boy through the hole to see.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And some of them believe that they're in hell.
Yeah. Right? They don't know what is going on. I mean, when you're just a normal adult, you don't know what the hell's going on. But yeah.
Just barely.
Yeah.
Just enough.
Like, just enough. But, like, these children they have no goddamn clue. So, yeah. So this little boy is put through this little hole. And he was able to fit out of the hole. And when he came back down, he told them that the coast was clear. So one by one, the older boys were able to get themselves out. I guess they, you know, digged further out. And Ed stayed behind to help lift the smaller kids and push them out through the hole. So Ed was able to climb out himself after all the children had been lifted out. And once they were all out of the hole, they started to run. They were obviously exhausted, and they pushed forward to made... I'm going to re-say that sentence. They were obviously exhausted, and they pushed forward and made it to a guard building. It turns out that they were buried on a construction site, and there was a guard that was stationed on this, you know, construction site. So at 4 a.m., Ed and all these kids roll up, and before anyone says anything, this guard knew exactly who they were and said, quote, "The world's been looking for you."
Wow.
Yeah. So the guard...
Also, imagine how surprised that guard is, because they're 100 miles away.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. He's just seeing the news, and he's like, wow, look at all these kids. Okay,
but like, they got buried on a construction site, and there's a guard always there, and they didn't notice them getting, like...
It's a big construction site.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What were they building?
I don't know.
Something.
Something.
Something big.
Something big. I don't know. But yeah. So we're going to, you know, go back to this construction
site. So they're found.
Yes, they're found. So the guard called the police, and this is when... This made me laugh. It's a little bit morbid, but... Or not morbid, but... When Ed and the kids were sent home... They were put back on a bus to Chowchilla to be reunited with their parents. I was like, you couldn't send them on any other thing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You couldn't have had their parents come. Like, I know that's a waste of gas. Not enough
PTSD.
But like, Jesus Christ, you're going to put them on a bus again?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was the quickest.
I was like, you crazy police.
What? Crazy police?
You crazy people. Why? They're traumatized. But anyway, so now that they knew that everyone was safe, they needed to figure out who the fuck could have done something like this.
Right.
So they retraced their steps back from the guard station to the point where they had been buried, and they discovered that they were in the back of a moving van, like I said earlier, and they had been buried into the ground and, you know, lowered through this makeshift hole. So naturally, they looked into anyone who had access to the site, and if anyone would have had a motive. So now we're going to get into the portion of the story where we talk about the absolute goddamn idiots who tried to get away with the quote-unquote perfect crime. I hate them. So
who doesn't?
Well, obviously, but like, they're so freaking stupid. So in their search, they came across the owner's son. The owner's son, Frederick Paul Woods the fourth.
The fourth.
Yeah, that's
the first three know. Were not enough.
So he and his two friends had previously been arrested for Grand Theft Auto, but had been released on probation. And these two friends were James Schoenfeld and Richard Schoenfeld.
Sorry, so this is the owner's son, meaning he owns friends. The moving car? Or the moving truck?
So he owns the construction site.
Oh, okay.
But the moving van was purchased under Richard's name. Or not Richard, Frederick.
Frederick.
Yeah.
Fred,
idiot. Him and his two friends. So investigators wanted to speak to Richard, so they paid a little visit to his wealthy parents' home, because obviously this little bitch still lives with his parents.
Are you kidding me?
No. His parents are wealthy as shit, and he's a little bitch boy, so he's like...
He's living at home?
He's gonna mooch off of mommy and daddy as long as he can, so...
How old is he?
Yeah, in his 20s. I don't know. They didn't say. So investigators, yes. So he wasn't there. He wasn't there. And so they got a search warrant. And they got a search warrant for his parents' house and obviously his bedroom. And they found a very detailed plan of this kidnapping, as well as a $5 million ransom note that looked like a first draft. And
his first draft
ransom note, and of the guns they had used were also found. So the moving van, like I said, had been purchased by Frederick Woods, and these three boys were in their 20s, all from very wealthy families, and they had never worked a day in their stupid lives. So their families said that they needed to do something with their lives and start making money on their own. And Frederick had a really bad temper, and he didn't want to, you know, do anything. He didn't get along with anyone except for these two brothers. So, yeah, they were like, we're gonna kidnap just a busload of children and get $5 million. So their pictures.
Right.
Right. That's the logical next step.
I mean, you can't, like,
Yeah.
Working for money.
Don't use daddy's connections to get a good job and actually make an honest living.
Providing value.
No.
Like, foreign concept.
Right. Like, just kidnap some kids. That's what I would
How
do,
How is
too.
That the first thing that they jumped
like,
to?
What?
How, like, you skipped so many steps on the way to 26 child abductions.
Right. Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, their pictures were put into the newspapers as wanted men. Surprisingly, on July 23rd, only 8 days later, Richard Schoenfeld, who was one of the brothers, I believe the younger one, walked into the police station willingly. He had returned home and confessed to his parents that he was willing to talk to the police. So he confessed to everything and told them that Frederick and James had gone their separate ways, but he explained what they looked like, what kind of guns they could be carrying, and they went on a nationwide manhunt to try to find them. On July 17th, a tip was called in from a man saying he saw someone who looked like James at a beach in Washington, and the police arrived and arrested him, because idiot. He said he was going to turn himself in, but, like, who the fuck knows or cares? Boo frickin' who, you idiot. That's what I have written down in my notes.
I was going to turn myself in, but the beach was just so much more.
I just had to catch those rays first, dude.
Fuck off. Also, their ransom note never made it, so they never actually demanded ransom. And also, like, they turned themselves in, but, like, they were just gonna leave them to die in that moving truck. Like, they weren't coming back.
Yeah, so I have this written down later on, but they were going to demand $5 million ransom, but when they tried to call in to the police station, the lines were so backed up because obviously 26 children were missing, so they couldn't get through to the, police. So they fell asleep. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm gonna keep going where I have it. So okay. they're so stupid. So yeah, they arrested Frederick. No, they arrested James. So
Fred's the only one left.
Yes. So not long after, Frederick was arrested in Vancouver, Canada. So James had also tried to get into Canada, but was turned away because he gave them some bullshit story about needing to stay with a friend, and apparently he didn't have any money, so they turned him away, I guess. And when he returned to try a second time, they searched his car and found a gun, so he was turned away a second time. And so Richard made it into Canada pretty quickly and easily, and then he checked into a hotel under an alias.
Do you mean Frederick?
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Frederick. This is, yeah. That idiot. So he wrote a letter to a friend back in California saying that he was okay and where he was, but that stupid ass idiot got himself turned in because the friend just brought the letter to the police because, hello? You're not gonna...
Yeah, like, oh yeah, I'm fine and I'm okay.
Yeah, imagine...
After I have abducted 26 children and the bus driver.
Right. Imagine, like, getting a letter from your friends and it being like, I just kidnapped 26 kids, but I'm chilling in Vancouver, Canada. Hope they're not dead. Like
a postcard?
Like, don't turn me in, haha. Like, what? What?
I was like, well...
you got a lot of faith in that friend, buddy.
Right.
Seriously.
I think you're just dumb, actually. Yeah, yeah. Just, like, so stupid. Idiot. It's like, well, I have to say, of the things you could do to lose a friendship, this has got to be one of them. Like, this has got to be the last straw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, so, after...
Who is this friend?
I don't know. It's just some person in California he wrote a letter to.
Who he believes cares
who he believed, wouldn't turn
him in. Cares that he's
in.
Okay.
Right. Jesus. So... after questioning, the police found out that these boys liked crime movies, specifically the Clint Eastwood film Dirty Harry, which includes a killer hijacking a school bus. So these idiots wanted to make their own movie together and were apparently making moves to do that, but started to mesh fiction with reality and decided that they wanted to commit the perfect crime. Because this is so perfect, they're so smart. And clearly... these boys, because I'm not going to call them men because they're not, were in dire need of money because their parents were going to stop giving them money. So,
wow.
I hate them.
Crazy. The trust fund runs out.
Right. What happens when the trust fund runs dry?
Oh, no.
Oh, God. So they knew the parents couldn't give them that much money, but Ronald Reagan had just announced a surplus of money from the California's Education Department. So that's the money that they were after. And they figured, you know, stealing kids off of a school bus would qualify as education. So they were like, well, we'll get that money. So.
Whoa. Stealing children off of a school bus qualifies as education?
Right.
Is that a quote?
No, that's just, you know.
That's what they thought?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
They're dumb.
Like, oh, yeah, we allocate a percentage of our budget for child abductions every year just in case there's ransom.
Yeah.
And actually that's $5 million this year and there's a surplus.
Right.
You guys are so right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
wow,
their plan
reality does not matter.
Right. So their plan was to demand $5 million ransom,
which they didn't even do.
Yes, because of the whole calling like in.
They only try one time.
Yeah, so I mean kind of. Yeah. So their plan was to demand $5 million in ransom, and then when they got the money, they would give the location of the children. But the police lines were so backed up, like I said, so they couldn't make their demands. So they began writing a letter to send, but fell asleep while writing it. Question mark. Since
you guys
they
just
had
committed like
right.
this heinous crime.
But they were tired.
You tired?
They had driven all night. They were so tired.
Oh my god.
So they fell asleep.
Like, at what point did they fall asleep? And during
I don't know.
Like, what word did they, I was like know. The last word that they wrote?
I don't know. They probably spilled their chalky milk on it. Oh god. So when they had woken up the next morning, they were greeted by the news the children and Ed had freed themselves. So, which baffled Richard, or Frederick, the idiot. Which baffled
I'm sure
Frederick.
It baffled all of them.
Evil, yeah, I mean, they're all idiots, but Frederick was the bad one, so...
The bad one.
They're all bad ones. I'm sorry, I take that back. But Frederick was, like, the evil one.
The worst
so,
one.
Yeah. So, it baffled Frederick because he had gone to such great lengths to make this happen.
Sorry, I bet he doesn't even know what baffled means at this point.
Probably. So, they pled guilty to kidnapping, ransom, robbery, but not the infliction of bodily harm. Because there was some debate whether or not mental trauma was considered bodily harm at the time. But all three men were found guilty on all charges, including bodily harm, and were sentenced to life without parole. This was overturned in 1981 because of this question of the definition of what bodily harm was. So their sentence went from life without the possibility of parole to life with the possibility of parole. And people were... pissed.
Right.
Yes. What?
So, after how long do they get considered for parole in this sentence? It's like life with the chance of parole. Is it like chance of parole after like 30 or 40 years?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. I don't really know how many years. But so, yeah, so everyone was pissed, especially the parents, because they had seen firsthand how affected these children were. They had nightmares and they were claustrophobic and they were terrified and that didn't matter because they weren't harmed physically. So 20 years after the abduction in 1996, the three men were interviewed in prison and they were said that they said that they were sorry. But
they were sorry.
I don't care. Like, I don't care about you or that you're sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. Shut up. Shut up.
Yeah.
So 36 years after the abduction in 2012, Richard was released. Not Frederick, Richard. Was released. And 3 years after that, his brother James was also released. Frederick was not released because he's still a dirtbag and said that he had no remorse and that the kids were remembering it wrong and that he didn't do anything wrong. Imagine.
Did he just try to gaslight these kids?
Yes. These 26 kids and Ed.
Yeah.
He's like, these stupid idiots are remembering it wrong. I didn't hurt them. What?
Oh, right. When you packed them into a van that was like 100 degrees.
Right. When you held a shotgun at the head of a 4-year-old. Sick.
Yeah. And then you put them into like...
And then you sent them to hell?
Holocaust-like conditions to go bury them in a moving truck.
Right. Underground with no air. And, like, nothing to eat and drink. Anyway.
And no remorse.
So, he doesn't care. He's not released. So let's
Should
go...
Rot.
Yeah. So, let's go slightly back in time to when the children were reunited with their parents for a sec. So, after the entire ordeal, and, you know, they're reunited with their parents, Lions Club... Whatever, I don't know. Lions Club sent all the children on a paid trip to Disneyland. And they put money into Ed's retirement fund. And in 2016, the children who survived had settled a lawsuit against their abductors, which was said to be enough to get some therapy, but not enough to buy a house. So, that sucks.
Wait, what?
What?
2016?
Yep.
When did they start the suit?
I don't know. But they...
That just seemed like so long after it happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, now they're like adults, you know? Now they know.
Not only are they adults, they're like 50 or 40.
Yeah.
Right? Because this happened in 77?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like they're all about like, what, 10?
Well, yeah. 10-ish. Okay, pop out the numbers.
Okay,
do it.
42 years later.
Give me the numbers.
I mean, they're basically like probably in their late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, they're adults. But, you know, I mean, wouldn't you as an adult be like, I should get some from some?
No, I would have been like trying to get money in my 20s.
Well, yeah, but
that's what they should have.
I guess they should have gotten it. I don't know.
I'm like curious if it took them that long to litigate this.
I don't know.
Because that's just fucking insane.
Yeah, well, they settled it in 2016. And
they got enough for therapy, but not to buy a house.
Yeah. Yeah. And in 2019, Frederick was up for a new parole hearing, but was denied again because he never took responsibility for what he did. And I believe his next parole hearing is set for, like, 2024, but, like, he's just going to stay in prison because that guy sucks.
This is, like, literally, they're, like... Take responsibility for what you did.
Yeah, just say Freddy. You're sorry, idiot.
Do you want to go in timeout for the rest of your life?
Like, he's like, he bought a mansion like a couple minutes away from the prison, and he's never seen it. Like he's just
wait, he has that
and
much
he got,
money.
Yeah, and he got married because his family's fucking rich. I guess they went back on their word about cutting off his trust fund. I don't really know.
Well, did they die and like leave it to him?
I think he also was like running a couple businesses.
From prison?
I don't know how it works, but apparently he's got like quite a bit of money and also got married in prison, but is still a dirtbag, like just a crazy guy. So
what the fuck?
I don't know. In 2012, Ed passed away at 91. But he went to his grave as a hero and actually won an award for what he did. The children he helped save kept in touch with Ed throughout their lives, and on his deathbed they came to say goodbye to him and thank him one last time for what he did. And every February 26th in Chowchilla is Edward Ray and Children Day to celebrate them and what they went through. And that is the Chowchilla school bus kidnapping. That's it.
Wow. Ta-da. 91's a good run for Ed.
Yeah. Oh, Ed.
Yeah, I know.
What a good guy.
Yeah, I'm so glad that they... I mean, it's a survival podcast, but, this could have gone a lot worse if they couldn't have gotten out.
Yeah. 26 children in a 26. Hole with only enough food for one day, and these fuckers couldn't even stay awake to write a letter. Like, yeah. Idiots. What?
And, like, still, 40 years later, he still doesn't have any remorse for what he did?
Yeah, he literally was like, oh, yeah, if they say that they're affected by it and they're hurt by it, they're remembering it wrong.
They're remembering it wrong?
Yeah. I'm sorry, were even... you there? Like, were you like... literally in the freaking hole or in the back of the van? Like, you
it's
weren't.
It's not like they're remembering it wrong. They're right. dealing with they're trauma. They're just dealing it's not with remembering.
It. Yeah. So, yeah. That is that on that.
That is that on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else to say about it, or would you like to move on to your happy thing?
Yeah, I don't know. What other words could be said about this fuckface? Yeah, I guess
there's nothing else. They suck. I mean,
yeah. But, do you know, like kind of like the after story of any of the kids? Did they, like... go on to do anything hopefully productive and weren't
I think a couple
completely
of them are
hampered by this.
Yeah, I think I don't know really the specific stories because I didn't get fully into that, but yeah,
I mean there was 26 of them.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I know one of them met Richard after he was released from prison, and he let him apologize and like accepted it because he just needed to like get that out. He was like, I can't hold on to this forever. So
wow, yeah, that's actually really nice of that survivor.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it was for the survivor, like he needed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he needed to forgive him. So
oh, okay.
So yeah,
I thought you meant like Richard felt like he needed to apologize.
Well, I mean, they did apologize, but like, I don't care about them, I care about the survivors. So yeah, he needed to forgive them because he held on to like a lot of anger and fear, and you know.
Yeah,
so but yeah,
and they got let out probably in their 60s or 70s.
Yeah, I think around there. But you know, anyway, what's your happy thing?
Oh, my cousin is in LA.
Oh yeah,
and we're gonna meet up next week. But I haven't seen him in like two, three years.
That's cool.
And then all of a sudden, he lives in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
But for some reason is in LA for a couple weeks.
Cool, that's nice.
So I'm gonna say what's up. Hey, dude, yo, cuz. I'm here.
Yeah.
Dude, like, I live here.
Dude, like, I live here.
Live here.
Yeah. Yeah, mine is that I, like, kind of accidentally bought hair
dye.
Oh,
you're going to become a ginger.
I'm going to probably become a ginger. I don't know. We're in 2020. I have never dyed my hair. I feel like I need to change it up. And
it's going to happen.
And it's going to happen probably.
And you accidentally bought it.
Kind of. It all happened so fast. And
right.
I kind of want to cut bangs, but also I don't want to go crazy. Not like straight across bangs, but like swoopy, like side bangs. Like little curtain bangs, like all the little TikTokers have.
The little TikTokers?
Yeah.
Is that a trend now?
Curtain bangs are...
Turtain bangs?
Turtain bangs are
That's
hot.
The shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Are you going to cut your own bangs?
I'm thinking about it.
You're thinking about it. That's bold.
I'm feeling bold right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Are you going to buy that little clip that helps you cut your hair?
No.
No?
No.
As seen on Shark Tank?
Yeah, as seen on Shark Tank. But anyway, if you'd like to follow us on Instagram and keep up with pictures that we post or, you know, just little shenanigans, follow us on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or true crime or paranormal or anything interesting at all, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Our Gmail is notodaypodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, our handle is nottodaypodcast, but the T on the end of podcast is a three, because that makes sense. Follow us on Facebook. We're just Not Today Podcast. That's it, I think. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
We did it, guys.
We did it.
Just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a weird one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, do it again.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.